tonight's handouts are right here. And when you leave tonight, there are 50 copies, so there should be plenty of them, at least one for each family. And last week I ran 30, so I am hoping that running 50 is enough. I will tell you a little bit about the handouts just so you know. I have done these differently than I've done handouts in the past. In the past, I've done basically just a sort of an outline, but this time I decided I'm going to give you sort of a written version which goes through and explains things a little bit better. So when you get home, you won't have to say, what in the world was he talking about? I've decided to do that. So this is part of my commentary on Revelation. I have the first half almost finished. I've been working on it for 10 years, I think. I just can't find time to break free and finish it. But Lord willing, I'm going to try my best to do that sometime in the coming months, if the Lord will give me the opportunity to do so. I told you that you had some assignments last week. Do you remember your assignments?
Yes.
What were your assignments?
Read.
You were going to read. And the reason for that is the book of Revelation is not what kind of a book? You remember? It's not a standalone book. So if you're going to understand the book of Revelation, you have to understand what comes before it. Book of Revelation is generally considered to be the last book of the New Testament to be written. And since that is the case, it is summarizing and pulling everything together. And that is very important. So let's go to, if you don't mind, go to your readings and just see what you've read. Let's talk about it for a minute. First assignment from Matthew chapter 21, verses 33 through 43. It is the parable of the wicked stewards. Okay. So, real quickly, tell me what Jesus taught in the parable. Good evening. What did he teach in the parable? All right, I'll get you started. A landowner. Did you read what you were supposed to read? Okay, if you read it, then you should know. A landowner had a vineyard and he went into...
Matthew 21:18, the first reading.
Is that 18?
That's the fig tree.
Okay. Yeah, I'm talking about 33 through 40.
Okay, I was confused, sorry.
Okay, sorry. Okay. And we'll come back to the fig tree, but this one is even more important. Okay, now, in the parable, he leaves some stewards in charge of his vineyard. Right? Okay. Now then, you can take it from there. Tell me what happens.
They were supposed to harvest and send him his portion of the harvest.
Send him his portion of the harvest. And did they?
They killed them.
No, they killed the servants that came. So the landowner says what?
I'll send my son.
I'll send my son. They'll recognize who he is, and surely then that will be sufficient. So the son comes. As they see him coming, what do they say? Here comes the heir, or another way of saying it. Here comes the son. And if we do what? If we kill him, then we will own all of this. Now, Jesus finishes the parable, and at the end of the parable, he asks a question. He says to those people who are there, what is going to happen when the king, the landowner, finds out about all of this? And how do they answer? The king is going to do what? He's going to bring his armies, and they will be killed, and he will do what to their city? He will what? He will burn it. Okay, now look at verse 45. The leaders of the Jewish people say what? They perceive he's talking about us. Okay, so in Matthew chapter 21, this last parable, is there any question about what is described here?
No.
Because, well, let's just go through. The landowner is whom? Who is it?
God.
God, okay. And who are the stewards? They're the people left in charge, so who are they in reality? The leaders of the Jewish nation, because they've been left in charge. God has put them in charge of reaching out to the peoples around, teaching them, etc. Okay, so now then, the servants come back. Who are the servants? Who are the servants that come back? Prophets, okay. And then who is the son? Okay. And then the city? What's the city? It's Jerusalem, right? Okay, so this is pretty easy to understand. When Jesus is talking about that, he is specifically talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. Now then, let's back up to the fig tree. The first one was really clear, so let's go now to the fig tree. This is the last week that Jesus is in, that he is present in his earthly ministry. And he comes from Bethany into the city of Jerusalem, and he passes a fig tree. What's unusual about it? What? There's no fruit on it. So what does Jesus do? What does he do? Okay, he curses the fig tree, and it withers up. And the apostles say, wow, this is amazing. And what is Jesus' response? How does Jesus respond to them when they say, wow, look how fast this happened? If you have faith, you can say to this mountain, be cast into the sea, and it will be done. The wording is very important here. First of all, a fig tree was a symbol of ancient Israel. Now, in America today, what are the symbols of America? Flag? Eagle? Statue of Liberty? Dollar bill? Okay, I mean, those are our symbols. Well, in ancient times, it was Mount Zion, Temple Mount. It was a vineyard. That was all of that was important to them. That was their symbol. Okay, so when the fig tree is there and it has not produced fruit, what is Jesus saying? It's a parable, but what does he say? What?
Israel hasn't produced.
Israel has not produced the fruit that was expected. So, since Israel has not produced the fruit that was expected, what's going to happen? God is going to withdraw. He's going to move his presence from them. And Israel is going to wither on the vine. That's another way of saying it. Okay, and it happens very quickly. So now then, the apostles have been really excited about all this, and they're jabbering about it, and Jesus says to them, now, do you see this mountain? Now, where is all this taking place? Well, it's the foot of the Temple Mount. He is probably coming off the Mount of Olives, and Mount Zion is right there in front of him. And so he's talking about Mount Zion. Do you see this mountain? Not a mountain, not any mountain, this mountain. And he says, if you say so, what's going to happen to it? What? It will be cast into the sea. If you say so. All right, that's important. Just remember a mountain being cast into the sea. Because when you come to the book of Revelation, you're going to see a mountain cast into the sea. When you read about some of the other things that we've talked about, you're going to be amazed because that's in Revelation 2. Okay? So now there's this mountain that's cast into the sea as a result of their prayers. Sea, by the way, is representative of the Gentile nations. You can find that in the book of Revelation. There are other places, but the sea is the Gentile nations, all non-Israel nations. Okay, so that's Matthew chapter 22. So let's move ahead to Matthew chapter 23. I really probably need to do this now. I didn't tell you to read this, but in Matthew chapter 22, there's another parable about a marriage feast. Do you remember? Okay, tell me about that real quick. I didn't really assign this, I don't think, but... Or I did? Okay, well, tell me about it. Marriage feast, quickly.
King invited people to the marriage feast, they didn't show up.
King invites people to the marriage feast, they don't show up. Not being very nice. And? What are the people who are invited do to the servants?
They kill them.
And as a result,
he brought his armies
and destroyed their city. And then he says, now you go out into the highways and byways. You go everywhere else. Okay, marriage feast. Who's the king?
God.
All right, who's the son?
Christ.
Jesus is the son. Okay, what is the marriage feast? They're invited to a marriage feast. What are they invited to? The church? Christianity? We talk about the church being the bride of Christ, right? People are invited to come and be a part of the bride of Christ. Okay, so that's the beginning of Christianity, right? Okay, but before that happens, you have those people that have turned down the invitation. Who are they? Many of the Jews back in that time. Now remember, when we say that, it's not all of the Jews, okay? Because probably the majority, but not an overwhelming amount, because there were large numbers of Jews who became Christians. Okay? So keep that in mind now. So with that in mind, let's go to Matthew chapter 23. Matthew chapter 23, Jesus is in the temple. And this is the day before his capture and crucifixion, etc. So this is events that take place very near the end of Jesus' ministry. In fact, when he leaves the temple on this occasion, he will say to them, you won't see me again until you can say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. So Jesus is finishing everything, and he does it in the temple. Okay, so keep in mind all of these events. What happens in the temple during that last week? What's taking place? I didn't assign this as reading. You just tell me some of the things that have happened. Calm week. What does Jesus do in the temple? Okay, he... What? Throws out money changers. And you probably need to know this if you don't. Annas and Caiaphas were father and son-in-law. Annas the father, Caiaphas the son-in-law. The Romans kicked Annas out of being the high priest. They didn't like some of the things he did, so Caiaphas became what we would call, I guess, the de facto high priest. He was in charge according to the Romans, but the Jews still looked at Annas. They were very wealthy. They were the Bill Gates of that time. They owned the banking business and the sacrifice business. And all the money from those two businesses came to them. So file that back in the things that are about to happen. So now Jesus begins and he pronounces a series of woes in chapter 23. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites. And it's just one after the other after the other. So it's a whole string of things. Let's go down near the end of the chapter and let's notice how the chapter concludes. Okay. Now, let's just start at verse 29. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! You build the tombs of the prophets and garnish the sepulchres of the righteous and say, if we had been, or if we had lived, in the days of our fathers, our ancestors, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets. Therefore, you are witnesses to yourselves that you are the children of those who killed the prophets. Okay, so the charge is they killed the prophets. And there are other passages in the New Testament which says, outside of Jerusalem, no prophet has died, etc. But, I mean, it's symbolic, but it's still saying they were responsible for killing the prophets. Then Jesus says, okay, it's time for you to finish what's been going on. You fill up the measure of what your fathers have started. Time for you to finish what what you, your father started. Remember that. Fill up the measure, because you're going to see that again. Remember that, the blood of the prophets. You're going to see that again. And then it says, you serpents, you generation of vipers, how can you escape the damnation of hell? Wherefore, I send you prophets and wise men and scribes, and some of them you will kill and crucify. Some of them you will scourge in your synagogues. So who is Jesus talking to? Synagogues. What nationality of people? He's talking about the Jewish people who are in rebellion at that point. And you will persecute my prophets from city to city. Look at verse 35. You're going to see this again too. That upon you, that's first century Jewish leaders who are in rebellion, upon you may come all the righteous blood shed on the earth. Verse 36. All these things shall happen unto this generation. That's pretty clear, isn't it? Jesus says it's going to happen to that generation, and everything he's talked about has been in regard to that. And then, of course, he goes on in verse 38. He says, your house is going to be left you desolate. The house is the temple. It's going to be destroyed. And I say unto you, you will not see me again until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Jesus went out and departed from the temple. I'm now in chapter 24. His disciples came to him to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said, do you see these things? So what are these things? What is what Jesus said to his apostles? Do you see these things? What did they just said? They were showing him what?
The temple buildings.
The buildings of the temple. And he said, do you see these things? So what is he talking about? He's talking about the temple. Not one stone will be left on another that will not be thrown down. He's talking about the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem. That is pretty obvious. So at this point, his disciples say, wow, will you give us the signs? So what you read, hopefully, in Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21 is a series of signs that Jesus gave them about what? What were the signs in relation to? In relation to the destruction of Jerusalem. Okay, they were those things that are being talked about. So let's make a quick trip through these. And let's just see exactly what we can find. All right, there are the signs, and they're to happen to that generation. So first, he is talking about first century Israel. And that was very clear in the opening verses of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, all of them. And here are the events. Event number one, false messiahs, right? Yes. Many will come in my name saying, I am Christ, and they will deceive many. Okay, now, did it happen in the first century? Answer is yes. Because in the book of Acts chapter 5, you have one example. Josephus gives you another example of someone named Theudas. In addition, there's another example from another source that names, quote, an Egyptian who does this. Now, at the same time, here's the reading from Josephus. I just want you to listen to it. You know who Josephus is, right? All right, he was born in 37 A.D. in Galilee. So he was raised right around where Jesus did a lot of his works. He knows a lot of people who had firsthand knowledge of Jesus. Now he says, there was also a body of wicked men. These were such as deceived and deluded the people under the pretense of divine inspiration. And these went before them into the wilderness as pretending that God would there show them the signal of liberty. And he goes through and says, but the Roman authorities saw what was happening, they went out and killed them all. Now, you remember what Jesus said? If you hear people say, go and find me in the wilderness, what? What did Jesus say? Don't go there, because it's not me. But it's a sign of all of those things that are to come. Now, let me go a little bit further, and I'm going to read again from Josephus. He says, in regard to the governor of that time, a man by the name of Felix, Felix caught and put to death many imposters claiming to be the Messiah every day. These impostors and deceivers persuaded the multitude to follow them into various places, to the wilderness. They promised many wonders and signs would be performed. They were false messianic figures. And Josephus says they were killing many of them a day. Now, we've got nuts that run around claiming the same thing today, but not anything like this. Number one, definitely talking about the first century, the destruction of Jerusalem. It's obvious. Second thing, what's sign number two?
You hear about wars and stories.
Wars and rumors of wars. Now, to us, we think, well, how in the world can that be a sign? And really, honestly, to us, it's probably not. But that was the period of what was called the Pax Romana. That was the Peace of Rome. And Rome was so powerful that there were no wars anywhere. They just shut it off. They had an iron rule, and they had total control. This went from the time of Augustus up to the time of Claudius. Okay? It ended in the time of Nero. But up until this time, it was their golden age. Very important. No wars. And then, in the time of Nero, everything broke loose again. There were wars everywhere. That was sign number two. Very obvious that it happened in the first century. Sign number three, famine, plagues, earthquakes. All you have to do is go back and look at your ancient history, and it will tell you that it happened. Acts chapter 11, verse 28 talks about a great famine that went all over the world. All of these things you can check. Obviously happened in the first century. Still happening today? Sure. But Jesus wasn't talking with these signs about today. He was talking about when those buildings of the temple were going to be destroyed. False prophets, yes, that happens. The Bible talks about a lot of that. Persecution, yes, tremendous persecution. Persecution against the church was very obvious. Hebrews chapter 10, which is written to Jewish Christians, says, "Recall the former days when after you were enlightened, you endured a hard struggle with sufferings and publicly being exposed to reproach and persecution." And it goes on to discuss a number of other things. Jesus says this will be like the birth pangs. Okay, what's being born during this time? The church. And the church is going to go through birth pangs, growing, persecution, okay? There will be increased lawlessness, which is number seven. And again, you just go back and read. Josephus says some of the people in Jerusalem trampled underfoot every law on the books. Here is his summary. All the people of every place betook themselves to violence, after which they got together in bodies in order to rob the people of the country, insomuch that the brutality and iniquity of those from their same nation was no different from the Romans. In fact, it seemed to be a much lighter thing to be ruined by the Romans than by themselves. So, all of this violence and lawlessness is taking place. Then, you have the prediction, and this is especially obvious in Luke, when he talks about the destruction and pagan armies surrounding the city of Jerusalem. Matthew and Mark says the abomination of desolation, which is in the holy place. Okay, what would the holy place be? What? I hear it. Say it out loud. Temple. Okay. And that abomination would be in that region, right around the holy place. And it happened during that time because inside the city of Jerusalem, there were three groups and they were all fighting against one another. And the zealots were the ones that were absolutely the worst because they would go right into the court of the temple and they would kill the priest. And Josephus records that that was what was going on. So again, all of these things are taking place in the first century. And then the pagan armies surround the city. That's what Luke says. So the abomination of desolation is the same thing as pagan armies. That's Rome. One of the symbols that's used for Rome is what? What was one of the Roman symbols? On all of their standards, what was their standard?
Eagle.
Okay. And do you remember where the carcass is? There will the eagles be gathered together. The carcass is the nation of Israel, and the eagles are the Roman standards, the Roman army. And when Luke says, to the Christians now. He says, when you see them circle your city, what? What are you to do? What? Get out. Now, that's going to be pretty hard. So, here's the history. 66 A.D., the Jews rebel against the Roman garrison in Jerusalem. 1,000 soldiers. Kill them all. Well, Rome does not take very kindly to that. And word goes very quickly to Damascus, very close by. It just so happens that Rome's most powerful legions were just coming back from a battle against the Parthians, their enemies, and they had all of their major legions right there in Damascus. Now, I guess the Jews didn't have a good CIA back in those days or drones to fly over and find out what's coming. Because if they had known that, I don't think they would have done it. I think they would have waited. But they don't know it. And so here comes the destruction of the Roman garrison. General of those Roman legions is named Cestius. Cestius immediately brings his legions from Damascus into Galilee. Now, that's the northern part, and by the way, this is where Josephus is the commander. But the Jewish forces in Galilee have no chance. All you have to do is go and read Josephus' account, eyewitness account of what takes place. I mean, the Romans just obliterate the Jewish forces in Galilee. Turn south, go right through Samaria with hardly any interference at all, and almost immediately surround the city of Jerusalem. Quickly, okay? Now, when that happens, Josephus says the seditious, that means the rebels, were so scared that they were about ready to surrender. Now, Rome was divided into three parts. Excuse me, not Rome, Jerusalem. One was the new city, or the temple city, and immediately the Roman armies crushed through the walls and got into the new city. Now then, we don't know what happens next. Josephus has no clue as to why it happened. But Josephus simply says, as for what happened next, it must have been that God was determined to punish this people. Because for no reason whatsoever, Cestius calls his troops to retreat. And the Romans pull back from the city of Jerusalem. Now, the Edomites and the Zealots and the others who are inside think they've won. And they go pouring out of the city, chasing the Romans toward Caesarea. Eusebius, who is the famous Christian historian, tells us exactly what happens. All the Christians left the city. All of them. They knew exactly what that sign meant. So, at this point now, you have yet another sign for the destruction of the city. Another thing that you can tell that it's not talking about the end of the world is Jesus said, you pray when this day comes, if you have a child, what? Do you remember? If you have a child, you pray that you're not nursing at that point. Or you pray that the flight does not come on a Sabbath day. Now, why would the end of the world matter for either of those two? It wouldn't. But it did in that time period. First of all, if it's a literal flight from a city of Jerusalem, it matters to the nursing mother. It's going to be hardship. In addition, it matters if it's on Sabbath day or not, because on the Sabbath day, everything's closed down. So you can't get supplies, you can't get anything. And as a result of that, Jesus tells them, you pray that it not be on one of those 2 days. So now then, all of these signs have been given, and these signs are signs about the destruction of the city of Jerusalem. And then after that, there will be a period of great tribulation, and then there will be signs in the heaven. Okay, let's talk about the signs in the heaven first of all.
I have one question.
Okay.
Why does verse... says it's a sign of his coming.
Because it was.
A sign of Jesus' coming.
Mm-hmm.
Explain that.
Explain that? I will next week. I'm laying the groundwork, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to be flippant, but that's in Revelation 1:7. And in Revelation 1:7, it talks about that. And... real quick answer. It says those who pierced him, all of the tribes of earth. Well, the tribes tell you that's Israel because nobody else is referred to as the tribes. Remember, earth was land, tribes of the land. And they were the ones who were responsible for the execution of Jesus. That's said over and over again in the New Testament. Peter says it, Paul says it, John says it. It's over and over again. And then it says, these things will happen, and he will come in the clouds. Again, well, what time is it? Somebody give me a quick. Let's see if I can take a side.
7:09.
What?
7:09.
Can you wait till next week on the rest?
Sure.
Okay. All right, if you can wait till next week. I will get to that next week, and we should get into the book of Revelation per se. Signs in the heavens. Okay, well, let me just say one thing here. Again, if you go back to Josephus, let me just read what Josephus has to say during that time period. Let me find this real quick because I'm running out of time here. Okay, where is it? Okay, here it is. This is directly from Josephus. He's there. There was a star resembling a sword which stood over the city that continued a whole year. Then also, before the rebellion and before those commotions that preceded the war, when the people were come in great crowds to the feast of unleavened bread, so great a light shone around the altar and the temple that it appeared to be as bright as daytime, and it lasted, please pay attention, half an hour. You'll see that again. Okay? Guess what? That was the year of Halley's Comet. Okay, so they're getting that vision. But now then, here's what really is riveting, because this is what Josephus is. Now, Josephus is not somebody who just is really gullible. I'm quoting directly. A certain prodigious and incredible phenomenon appeared. I suppose that the account of it would seem like a fable were it not related by those who saw it, and were not the events that followed it of so incredible a nature to deserve such signals. Before the setting of the sun, chariots and troops of soldiers were seen running about in the clouds surrounding our cities, and at the feast which we call Pentecost, the priests were going by night into the inner court to perform their sacred vows, and they heard a great quaking. They heard it, okay? That it wasn't actually doing it, they just heard it. And as they watched, a great light appeared, and they heard the sound of the great multitude saying, "We will remove ourselves from here." Now Josephus says, you know, this is hard to believe. And he says, if there weren't so many people that had told me this, that had actually seen this, I would not believe this. But he said, there were so many people who saw it and watched it and knew what was going on. Signs in the heaven. And then finally, there will be the sign of the Son of Man. Okay, now what is the sign of the Son of Man? All right, the sign of the Son of Man is the fact that somebody in heaven has received a kingdom. That's Jesus' sign. Daniel chapter 7. Verses 13 and 14, I gave you that as one of your readings. Someone approaches the Ancient of Days, that's God, and he is given a kingdom, and he is seated on the right hand of God. Stephen has a vision. When he is being executed, he says, "I see the Son of Man seated on the right hand of God." No, standing on the right hand of God. All right, so now this is the sign. It is Christ has come in his kingdom. All right, so now then, you put all that together, and that's the background for the book of Revelation. And all of that is going to appear again. And like I say, we will definitely get into the coming in the clouds next week and talk about something else. So let me give you, I'm just going to summarize this for you. Matthew. Matthew talks about war, international strife, famine, earthquakes, persecution, and what we will call the destruction of Israel. That's in chapter 24. Book of Revelation in chapter 6 talks about war, international strife, famine, earthquakes, persecution, and the destruction of Israel. Perfectly aligned. Both Matthew and Revelation talk about the judgment of a single city that was sinful, and it follows the completion of a world mission. Both of them speak about great tribulation. Both of them speak about the abomination of desolation. Both of them urge the faithful to flee the city. Both speak about false prophets and false miracles. Both talk about the coming of the Son of Man on the clouds. Both talk about the sounding of a trumpet at the time of the end. Both speak about the salvation of the elect. Both talk about the gathering of the birds to feed on the carcass of the dead. Are they talking about the same thing? Would you get the idea that somehow they just might be? I mean, the similarities are just overwhelming. Well, what about Luke? Well, Luke talks about an indictment of Jerusalem, the persecution of the saints. The city is doomed to destruction by the Gentiles. Judgment follows, and the city is trodden down until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. Revelation says Babylon is indicted. We're going to see that represents Jerusalem. Saints are persecuted. City is doomed to destruction by the Gentiles. There is a judgment that follows, and the city is trodden down for 42 months by the Gentiles. Revelation chapter 11 is a direct quote from Luke chapter 21. What about Mark in Revelation? Mark talks about miraculous powers, followers being persecuted for preaching. City of Jerusalem is judged, the Son of Man is coming, and he's coming on this generation. Revelation talks about miraculous powers, the followers persecuted for preaching the gospel, Jerusalem being judged, the Son of Man coming, and concludes by saying, the hour of judgment has come. They're talking about the same thing. That's why it is so important that we have this background from the prophets and from the teachings of Jesus before we actually get into the discussion of what takes place in the book of Revelation. All right, quick review, and then I'll put all of these out. And I think there are 12 pages tonight, so you got plenty to go home and read. I'm not going to give you homework for next week. If you want to start in Revelation 1, that's okay. Three times in the opening chapter, these things are about to happen. They're at hand. They're soon to come. Four times in chapter 22, same thing. Now, I believe Jesus meant what he said, because he emphasizes in the beginning and the end. With that in mind, as we look at Revelation 1:7 next week, we're going to see what he meant when he said, "Behold, I am coming in the clouds." Okay? All right. Thank you very much for your attention.